Welcome to the Space Cave. I'm David Huntsberger, a big warg to all of you, which is a term coined by our friend Noan Wells, combination of warm and hug, kind of like that Dutch term, I think it's Dutch, hygge, and I don't think I'm pronouncing that correctly, but that's like if you come in from a cold day and you warm up by a fire and maybe get some hot chocolate or something, that feeling is called hygge, or hygge, I don't know, something like that, and warg. It's a feeling of coming into the space cave, get away from the world and all its troubles, its frantic pace, the chaos, the worry, the dread. Relax. Let's have a nice conversation. This one involves some beer. Before we get started, a thank you, as always, to everyone who supports this show through Patreon. This show is made ad-free because of contributions from listeners just like you. And welcome to our newest patron, Cody Ryan. Thanks for joining. A name from way back, someone who used to check in all the time. And, you know, when you're in comedy for a long time, people show up and then sometimes they come in really excited and they can't get enough of everything you're doing and then they drift away. That's normal. And good to see Cody Ryan's name, someone that's just kind of always checked in from time to time. Nice to see your name pop up. Anyway, here's a conversation with a good friend of mine, someone I've loved her comedy for so long. We were in Austin around the same time, early on in our journey through stand-up comedy. I think she's just fantastic. And for the last 6 years or so, she's been really pursuing dog training, and there's no one better to do it. She's such a kind soul, good with animals. I think that says a lot about somebody. I'm just a little leery if someone's like, nah, I don't like dogs, or I don't like pets or animals in general. I get it. Everyone has their own thing. But zero animals? You don't like any? To me, that's a bit of a red flag. And she's the opposite, loves animals, and animals are kind unto her as well. And why wouldn't they be? She's great. So grab a lager with us, sit back, relax, and enjoy part one with Lisa Delarios.
And that's not even frozen. If it was frozen, or if you put all his kibble in there, save it for the pod, Lisa.
You're already going. You're on. You're chatting away. And he's spread out, arms wide, or front legs. I call them arms, but his front legs are spread out. And then you're saying if I put his regular kind of kibble dog food in there, should I seal it with some peanut butter?
Yeah, so I would mix his kibble with either some wet food or some canned pumpkin. You could even pour a little bone broth up in there.
Ooh.
And then I'll use peanut butter to kind of seal up that little hole on the side. Or you could put a little, and then stick it in, you know, in like a little pan or something so it doesn't leak in your freezer.
Okay.
And then you're like, oh, this will actually burn. Okay, we'll save it for the pod. We're not recording.
We're knee deep into it. We're recording away. And
we are,
but I hope you say that throughout the whole conversation. Is like, I'll stop. I gotta save it for the.
Are we recording?
Yeah, I don't edit anything. I just started, then I just figure it's.
Oh, you great!
Know, I've been doing it so long this way that if people don't like it, they can just skip ahead a little bit until we're like really chatting.
Yeah, you've got a finger. You can push fast forward.
Yeah. Skip ahead if you don't like. I mean, it's never once been a hard-hitting investigative podcast of any sort. So there's never really any particular kind of welcome, folks. There's nothing like that. And even just in the little bit you were saying, I had like 50 thoughts relating to dogs, relating to comedy, because you and I know each other for a long time now, almost 20 years.
Jeez. I mean, cool.
Yeah. Well, it's great to see you, and thanks for being here to do this. And I don't want to keep you from it, because twice you false started. I'm like, no, don't do it yet. So now we can fully our beers open, and we're having this taco truck lager from Dust Bowl Brewing.
Product placement.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've never heard of them. So maybe they're a huge brewery in some other part of the world, and this is the equivalent of sharing like a Bud Light, but I'm just unfamiliar with it.
I've never heard of this, but it looks like just the can looks like it's going to be a thirst quencher. You know what I'm saying? It's like bright, it's yellow, it's taco truck, like that sounds summery.
Yeah, their branding team, and I'd like to think it's just a person as opposed to like a whole table, you know, conference room full of people going, oh, if I could just weigh in. But I think my pitch, if I were in that room, would have been like, I like so-and-so's drawing here of the little truck on the sea of taco, and I like the color scheme because if I open a cooler in any kind of warmish weather and I see this in ice, mm-hmm. I'm getting it.
Same. Yeah. It's like this like friendly, what kind of yellow is that? Like,
I have no idea. I know that when
daffodil yellow.
Sure. Yeah. I don't see colors very well. And I know.
I didn't know. Oh, 20 years we've known each other and I'm just learning that your color.
You come in here, I just divulge secrets. I've kept this from you for 20 years. Let me tell you, I don't see colors very well.
What does that mean?
It means if I use the eyedropper in Photoshop and I'm like, I'm going to go get a yellow, I inevitably always choose this green that is very pleasant to me. It's like neon, vibrant. Mm. I think of it, it's like, oh, that looks like canary yellow. Mm. And then my partner is like, please stop using that color. It is so hideous.
What is it, like chartreuse?
I wouldn't even know. I'd have to tell you the hex code. I'd have to tell you the six. Like, oh, what I love is an H6, G1, you know, like something like that. I don't know what it is. But
you think it's yellow?
I do, yeah. And
but it's not.
I have railed against it for a long time, thinking that like this is not a disability. I can see colors. Like I really couldn't have been in like the Air Force or something. I don't see the colors well enough. And then every now and again, a TV screen or a magazine page will have one of these things. Sometimes they're a joke. Like they'll be buried in like a camouflage, and within the color scheme, it'll say colorblind people are stupid, something like that. And then someone will show it to me and be like, can you get that? I'll be like, flowers? And then they start laughing. Like, you really can't read that? Like,
are you serious?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that. Yeah. That's a good test.
It's a pretty good test.
To find out if you are. And rude.
Yeah.
It's not a nice test.
No, it's not. It's insensitive. But sometimes they're not saying that sort of thing insensitively. It'll just say like a production company's name. And then, again, whoever I'm watching with will pause and be like, you didn't catch that, did you? Like, no. And say something buried in there, you know, stay tuned or something like, I never want to stay tuned. It just looks like a collage to me.
Interesting. You and dogs have that in common because dogs see color differently.
And they see really well at night.
They do?
I didn't know that, but yeah.
I don't know everything about dogs.
I brought you here because I thought you knew every single thing.
I'm here to tell you I don't. There's always more to learn.
All right. Well, that's a good beer opening line. Mm-hmm. There's always more to learn.
There's always more to learn. Oh, nice.
Pretty good. I'm going to pour mine into my Brett Kern handmade stein. Looks like a blow-up thing. He made it specifically for this show.
That's so cool that it looks like an inflatable.
Yeah, isn't that neat? He sells a lot of these. I shouldn't say he made this. He sent this one specifically for the show. He makes
love that.
And manufactures this a lot. So if you want one, Brett Kern Art. He's a really talented artist.
I'll say that is super cute. And it's got like the little air nozzle thing even. Detail of that. It really does look like a little inflatable mug, but it's ceramic.
That's right. Yeah. And all the little imperfections you'd see in like a pool floaty.
Yeah.
What it looks like. Yeah. It's a good one. So what do you think of this taco truck lager?
I just took a nice sip. Mmm. It's like, it's just smooth. It's an easy drinker.
Yeah. It's almost like a pilsner. It's a little crisp.
Yeah, I'm actually now sensing a tiny bit of maybe cinnamon.
Ooh, okay.
Did you catch that?
I hate to admit two things at once here, but I'm also not the greatest super taster. You know, I wouldn't be great in a kitchen to be like, what's that, saffron? I don't know.
But you don't have that thing, I can't remember the name, where you're like, this tastes like a triangle.
Oh, synesthesia.
Synesthesia. I knew you'd know the word. The man who mistook his wife for a hat, right? That's the book about Oliver Sacks. Look at us.
I know. Look, I read that after Chuck had his fall. And then I read this book called The Brain That Changes Itself by Norman Doidge.
Oh, I've not heard of that one.
Oh, fantastic. I'd love to have him on this show. Really fascinating. Like a kind of a... You just took it a step further. I don't know that much about Oliver Sacks, but like I've read The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat and like all those, I don't want to call them abnormalities. Maladies? I don't know. What are they? Those idiosyncrasies?
Atypical, neuroatypical?
Yeah. I'd say that's right.
There is a term for it because like we're neuro, well, I don't know. There's neurotypical. And then there's the one that's not neurotypical.
Well, I hear the term neurodivergent chucked around these
days.
That's
it. Neurodivergency. Yeah.
Is that the... I guess I brought you on here to talk about dogs, then we end up speculating. What do you think it is? But I knew for a while it was kind of popular for people like, oh, here's my OCD, or here's my Asperger's, or here's my... And people go, that's insensitive. You don't have that. You shouldn't joke around about autism. And I don't know if that's now the new kind of... I should ask someone. If you're familiar with this and you're like, please stop rambling on, you don't know what you're talking about, pings@thespacecave.com and let's chat about it and let's learn a little more as opposed to, I think there is value in people guessing. And because at least shows you're inquisitive and you're not like foundationally rooted in, I won't change. It's this. Listen, buddy, you're autistic and nothing else. There's that.
Yeah.
And that seems rude. And yet when you are... certainly unaware, uneducated, you're aware of the fact that you are ignorant and you're trying to talk your way through to like, how ignorant am I? I don't think that's as insensitive. Probably for someone that knows a lot and or suffers from that thing listening, you're like, oh, it's pretty insensitive. But
unless they don't consider it suffering.
That's true. Yeah. They're just existing.
This is who I am.
Yeah.
It's kind of like people, oh God, now I don't know what the correct term is for people who don't have hearing, the sense of hearing.
Well, I was thinking about that the other day, and I still think deaf is in the deaf community.
Okay,
so
yeah.
The Sound of Metal, and like there's like a pridefulness in like, exactly. Hey, we're in the deaf community.
That, the pridefulness, not like, oh, we're lacking, like because we're not hearing.
Yeah.
No, and sign language is so cool. It's so beautiful. I saw a really good episode of Queer Eye, which I love Queer Eye.
Okay.
Do you watch it now with the Fab Five?
I watched one or two episodes of the new one. And what I didn't love is the, and I know I'm wrong because people have told me, oh, it's so emotional after the fact that people are stuck in these ruts.
Yeah.
But what I saw is someone being kind of assimilated into like, now you're cool. Now you're like everyone else. I'm like, ah, give them their funky look. Like they're unique.
Well, sometimes I will admit, like, I'm like, that is not the right look for this guy. But they do try to say, okay, we know this is your thing. We know you love the Beatles and you only want to wear the Beatles t-shirts. But how about like for your wife, when you take your wife out to dinner, maybe she would like it if you got a little dressed up. And it's sort of like they try to take who the person is and give them permission to kind of... try something, a fancier version or something. But every now and then I'm like, why did you put those platform loafers on that old hippie? Like, no. But there was a young man who spoke with sign language. He was deaf and it was a really good episode is all I'm saying.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. And he was he had a lot of pride and he was helping. He was a coach for a sports team of all deaf kids and you know, just trying to, he was saying how challenging it is to try to be in sports when you don't have the hearing sense, when you're deaf.
Yeah, it is. I know there's a compulsion to not say it because you're like, is this insensitive? Should I be saying like hearing impaired or something?
Hearing
like...
impaired, yeah, I don't know. Did you say you don't edit this podcast?
If you have something down the road, if like in the future you're like, you know, I'm driving home and think about it, why don't you cut that part? Then I'll go, oh, okay, I'll search through it. But
no, not that. I was just like, oh my God, we could ramble.
Yeah, we definitely could. And you know, that I think so podcasting, the general nature of it, of just the free form, what do people stumble upon? Sometimes they say really funny things, sometimes they say revelatory things, or they have these epiphanies. And the way it started for me, like this, kind of like in a garage, just chatting and really having fun with your friends. You're already taking an element of the spontaneity away because you have microphones and headphones.
Right.
But then you add cameras and it suddenly feels, if you're like this, if you're someone that's just like at a party and suddenly a camera shows up and you're like, oh
yeah.
Or when you're at a family gathering as a child and say something funny and there's adult with a camera. That's to me what the cameras feel like. Well, you took all the fun away. Now someone's here to like capture it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think of podcasting and where it started and how it felt so punk rock. And then now it's just a two-camera shot and like subtitles.
Right.
I can be very negative about that. But then I think about people who are deaf and I'm like, oh, that's a great way. Mm. But what percentage are we dealing with that are watching those videos of podcasts and reading the transcripts? I would say it's 95% people that have the ability to go for a hike, go outside and listen to this, do something, and use your working ears. And as opposed to like people that are like, I don't have that ability, I'm deaf.
Right.
Then I would think, it's tempting to add a...
I never thought about that. I never thought about podcasting for deaf people.
Well, Apple now is adding transcripts for free. And so there were services before, and it's just time consuming more than anything. And so undoubtedly, they're going to get some things a little inaccurate. But overall, like, I feel very comfortable with that. Like, if
transcript in what way?
Like, you can go to the website, or now you can click, like, through your player app. You know, I subscribe to this podcast, and then it'll have a little link that says transcript.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are hearing impaired, if you are deaf, you click on that, and then you can just read the podcast.
Oh, right.
And I don't know how, I mean, the AI is so good now. It can distinguish between your voice and mine. Might not get all the words perfectly, but in general, the person could read through it and be like, I like that.
Mm.
And that's the best I can offer for this show.
Because
I would love to add the video for that percentage of the community, but I think it's such a small sliver that it's not worth it to me. And that sounds so insensitive, but.
No. I just heard Cobra let out a really nice sigh.
Oh.
I love that.
He's finished his Kong, he's laying down.
Yep.
And I was worried, well, now he's wagging his tail.
That's because he knows you're looking at him and talking about him.
Yeah. Well, so when you were talking in the initial stages and saying, we'll cut this, we'll save this for the podcast, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was thinking a lot about comedy, you and I going way back, and a show that was on that I loved back in the early 2000s, BET's Comic View. Did you ever watch Comic View?
I don't remember. If I did, I don't remember.
Oh.
Was it stand-up?
Yeah, it was stand-up. And I just remember like a lot of black comedians would talk about white people and their dogs. And it was it was just a lot of like... Well, so-and-so has a flea condition, so we're going to spend $1,000. It was just very like, these dogs need so much care. And they're like, and where I'm from, if the dog could just stay alive, is welcome to hang out with us. And just, we fed it what we had, you know, the cheapest dog food. And if something happened, like, all right, man, you got to tough it out. You got to just work through this.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see a lot of that with like, well, this dog needs mittens and it's hypoallergenic and it needs these things. Like,
whew,
that's a lot. These are supposed to be animals that at one point were somewhat self-sufficient. And I sent you that link to that article about the dog that got lost in that skiing avalanche. What person takes a dog skiing in the backcountry and subjects it to like a potential avalanche?
He was skiing with the dog?
Yeah, like a group of friends were all skiing. The dog's just running along on the snow, I guess.
Oh my God. That sounds like a Subaru commercial.
If they relocate this dog, which they have found it on the game cameras, that it for 11 months has been living solo out in the wilderness. If they're able to like reconnect it with the owner, I imagine it's Subarus for life for that person.
Oh, for sure. I wonder. I would like to know. Like, so this dog is lost in the wilderness. So they hired a tracker, a dog tracker, right?
Mm.
And there is a whole world, and I know this because I interviewed for a job at a board and train facility in upstate New York. I went up there in January for the interview. She flew me out there and everything. And I decided I shouldn't have gone in January in upstate New York. So I was like, no, not ready for this.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, it was small town, it was rural, beautiful. But she, they had a brand new client. It was a puppy, like, you know, these rich people from Manhattan. And the first night they, and every, they have like this whole back, and it's in the woods, this facility. It's beautiful, like a big old barn, and they have kennels in there, and they have the whole fence system in the back. And I guess they had had some repair guys there earlier in the day, and they had left a gap in the fence.
Eey.
And it's night, it's winter, this puppy gets out of the fence.
Oh, no.
And is in the woods and gone, and it's night. And the woman told me this epic story, and I was like, in my head, this has to be a movie.
Yeah.
It was, there were all these characters. They had like a pet communicator come, and the, oh, and the owner of the dog, when they told him your dog's missing, he said, I'm taking my helicopter there tonight, and I'm bringing my gun. Like, he was so angry at first because they had lost his dog.
Yeah.
Beloved dog. And apparently the marriage was strained, and this puppy was like, so kind of like breathing new life into their relationship. But yeah, she, there was, I don't remember all the details, I have a terrible memory, but they hired a tracker, and there was, they started spotting the dog in the woods, and they would leave food and the camera, and there was this whole strategy. And and the final stages of it, the woman's husband, the woman that runs the boarding facility, they own it together, the couple, he had to sleep outside in the woods next to the feeder station with the camera, because he, they first, they have to make sure he's coming back to this same location, the dog. And then he had to, I guess because they, these trackers know that the dog gets into this really kind of fight or flight state.
Well, when you say puppy, how old is this dog at this time?
I don't remember, but okay. It was young.
Yeah.
It was under one.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might have been adolescent, but they, I guess they kind of go into this sort of, they become more skittish, and I don't know, like the owner, I don't know why the owner wouldn't be sleeping out there. Because if it were my dog, I would be, I would set up a tent next to that feeder station where the camera is. But there's a, there's some reason why you don't. I don't remember what that is. So, because when you sent me that story, they were like, oh, we're spotting the dog at this location. If that were my dog, that's where I would just be living. Right. I would just, you know.
Well, I think I said to you, like, I'd love to see like a GoPro or the footage of like the dog during the day. Because I'm curious, you know, mountain lions will travel like 30 miles a day. Mm. Is it dumb to stay at that feeding station because the dog's like, I'm there once a week and then I'm moving. Like, I go so far. I have this big loop because I don't want to leave my scent anywhere. I'm curious, like, they're... Yeah. Primitive sort of reaction to prey and, you know, being prey.
I'm curious about that too. That I'd like to kind of go down a Google rabbit hole with that. Like, how do you become a professional dog tracker? I think, but they didn't, they found the dog, and in the final moments, the guy was like laying there on the ground. He saw the dog at the feeder station, and he was instructed, like, don't move, don't say anything. And you have to wait until the dog, like, if you try to, like, because he didn't, I don't know if he, I don't think he had a collar on or something, you know, he didn't have anything to hold on to. I don't remember. I love when I'm, like, telling stories and I don't remember the details of the story. But it was very harrowing.
Yeah.
They found the dog. They saved the dog.
But it
took a long time.
The ending, the conclusion is always so fascinating to me because, like, you'll see videos of this person was deployed for X amount of time, like sometimes very long, and they mm-hmm. get home, or this dog was lost, or they had to give the dog away while the person was gone.
Mm-hmm.
They came back and they went to the shelter and the dog flips out. But I'm always like, in contrast to this sort of story, like, yeah, but like when a dog is very domesticated and or confined, the person that showed them a lot of attention or took them out for walks, like, they may never forget that. But if you take them skiing and lose them in an avalanche and then they get to walk and run all day mm-hmm. and then they see you, I don't think they harbor any like, you left me out here. I think it's like, dude, I'm walking all the time and I'm doing okay. And like all these primitive instincts have kicked back in. Who are you again? So I don't think the reunion would be, just guessing, as emotional as someone that was like overseas or something.
I would guess that that dog is in a state of survival, like like fight or flight, just all, I forget which nervous system that is. The fight or flight, autonomic? Yeah, like I would guess like the amount of like stress hormones that have been, they must be so on edge and in that heightened state of reality, because dogs can't survive well on their own, generally domesticated dogs.
Yeah.
But probably certain breeds are better at it. You know, the ones that were originally hunting dogs, or, you know, working dogs, you know, versus like a pug or something, you know. And in fact, there was a story of, this was some time ago, but I still remember this story. It was a Australian family with an Australian cattle dog, and they were on a boat, and there was a storm, choppy seas, dog went overboard. They couldn't jump in after him because they would have drowned. It was, and, but they were like devastated, the family. Yeah. And they were far from any land. I don't know if it was a year later, but it was close to a year later that the dog was found on an uninhabited island that was like maybe 3 miles from where he went overboard. He swam through like stormy, choppy ocean, got to an island and survived eating wild goats. And you can Google that. It was a real thing. And I'm like, why hasn't that been a movie? Although I wouldn't want to watch that movie because I would be too worried about the dog and too sad that it was scared and confused and suffering. I don't think that dog's having a blast. If that's what you're thinking, they're like, wow, finally, Call of the Wild. I think that dog is scared. And but has some instincts that keep every living organism wants to survive.
Yeah. Imagine if you're a family and you lost like your two goats and they, they got to that island and you got reunited with them and they're like, no, no.
First of all, just that there are wild goats on an island. Like that's pretty cool.
Yeah. How do they get there?
Yeah, that probably. I feel bad about the baby goats. I think he was eating baby goats. I remember that detail. He is a domesticated pet.
Yeah,
with, he's gonna with eat fangs baby goats
and instinctual, kind of like I'm hungry, reactive.
Yeah,
measure when this is a somewhat similar story, but not quite. But this is like the first dog that I ever technically kind of owned, and it was a short tenure. I'd had a cat. I, like all the pictures of me when I was a kid are just animals everywhere, mostly cats.
But we have that in common, David.
Did you love Swiss Family Robinson?
Oh yeah.
That kid, I was like, yeah, that's how I'd be. I would just have all kinds of animals, and I got my tiger. He's running out to catch. Like, that's how I was, just in my head. But it was if there were ducks around or goats or we had bunnies,
always
all kinds of stuff, and. One day we're driving home. I'm like 11. We see some sets of eyes glowing in the headlights crossing our street. It was kind of the rural area of north of Reno. And we get closer and it's coyotes. We're like, no. So we race into the driveway and do an inventory. At the time, I think we had 5 cats.
Oh, and they were outside cats.
Sometimes. And my main guy was like the toughest, cool. He was a Siamese cat named Pooh. And Pooh was like the toughest, greatest cat. And he never came home. Aww. And I know. And I just like hated coyotes for so long.
Yeah.
And so like as time went on, I'm like, you know, I'd like to get a dog. I've never had a dog. I've always just kind of had cats. So someone in my family, I think my mom, knew these women that did kind of a rescue. And this dog had been abused. And he was a black lab. He was like a year old-ish, 1 to 3-ish. And brought him over, and for like 2 hours it was just him kind of cowering by them and me petting him a little but not getting too close and just understanding like, now you just wait, buddy, we're gonna be pals. I'll give you your space. I'm just gonna let you do your thing. So they finally, I think they moved him into my room, and then it took a while as they tiptoed out, and then I went to sleep. And I woke up. I don't think I ever really went to sleep. I'd wake up and look down like, are we friends yet?
Yeah.
He'd just be kind of cowering down there. And then his kind of nervousness started to tick up where he was kind of pacing. And I was like, you probably have to go to the bathroom. Let's do it. So I went and I opened the back sliding glass door, and we had a backyard with a 6-foot chain link fence around it. And he went out the door, sprinted, and leaped the fence in one bound. Jet black dog in the dead of night in the Nevada desert.
No!
Just runs out into the sagebrush. And so I'm like, well, he likes to pee outside. So I'm just standing at the door for a while, just trying to spot him.
Like, how far old
is he going? I'm 11 or 12.
Oh, my God.
And I'm still holding out hope, like, this is going to be great when he comes and jumps back over the fence.
Oh.
Comes in and we're officially friends. And I wait for quite a while and I have to go wake up my mom, like, I think his name was Duke. Duke is not coming back.
You said that?
Yeah. I'm just like, he's outside. I don't want to scare him. What should we do? Yeah, and she's like, yeah, let's not scare him. We call the women. They show up in tears. But even as they go out with like flashlights and find him, I'm like, okay, all right, this is a rough start, but they'll bring him back and we'll start again. And they just like brought him to their car and left.
Oh, no.
I didn't even like get to say goodbye or anything. Oh. As though it was like my fault. I'm like, should I not let him out to go to the bathroom? It's a pretty big fence. And so then it was a while after that till I got another dog. But that first one, the being
You should be able to let your dog in the backyard to go pee in that, at night.
I don't know how you would do fence. That transition, that handoff. Like, I've seen dogs that were abused that became, like, unaware of that later. Mm-hmm. We had a dog that we adopted within the next 5 years of that was more like my mom's dog that had been abused. And she was young, and for her whole life until like age 14, if someone jumped up to like run and grab the landline phone, she would duck away and cower. Mm. And we'd be like, you've been with us for over a decade. Mm-hmm. No one's ever laid a finger on you. Cool it. But she never got over like, someone's going to harm me.
Yeah.
To the point where it seemed a little like, all right. Like, she was not the most enjoyable dog.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say like she had a fighting chance because she'd had like a rough start.
Mm.
But how would you integrate that dog? I don't know. I know you've like taken some certifications and in this journey of really getting in-depth knowledge of dog training. But to me, that feels almost like a dog by dog thing of, okay, we have this dog that's been abused. There's an 11-year-old that wants to be its pal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know where you would start to like, should I have gone over to like their house and just stayed the night a bunch of times until the dog felt comfortable and then bring him into my space? Or what would make more sense than just like a couple hours and like, see ya?
The dog that jumped the fence?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, that would have been good information for you guys to know that there was a flight risk.
Yeah.
You know, there are Houdini type dogs that, and maybe they didn't know, maybe, but you know, there's no way of knowing that a dog has the ability to jump over a 6-foot chain link fence.
And it's a weird thing for an 11-year-old to ask.
Yeah, no.
Can't jump fences.
That was missing information. Yeah. So generally, like with any dog that you just get from a rescue, first of all, you have to give them a period of decompression where you don't really ask anything of them. You just kind of, I mean, you don't, and I'm not a believer in just ignoring them, like, but definitely not putting pressure on them to, you know, be affectionate or be whatever our idea of what we want our dogs to be.
Yeah.
But just to kind of let them choose to come to you, you know? And yeah, generally they say if you get a dog out of the shelter, you want to give them a month of just like, let this dog have a moment to, because their whole, who knows what their background is before they ended up in the shelter. And then the shelter is, you know, a hellscape. And so this dog's just coming out of trauma and they don't have any, you know, imagine what that would feel like, you know, like your whole world, especially some of these dogs that have lived with a family and then they get surrendered, which is incredibly common. And there's all different reasons that happens. And, you know, I know sometimes, I mean, the reason I don't have a dog right now is because I don't have the money because of vet care, period. Like that. And also if I ever want to travel, like boarding, it's like, I mean, I still have so much vet debt from, I had two dogs in a row that had congestive heart failure. And I've spent more on my dog's healthcare than ever on my own. But yeah, so I think I don't know what my train of thought, why I went back to that. Where was I going?
Well, just the time it takes to get them comfortable. Because I remember another detail, too, with them being, you know, two women that had been around. He was comfortable with them. He'd been abused and was afraid of men. Mm. And then mm-hmm. it was like, well, I'm a little man. I'm 11.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll, like, sneak through. And I think just maybe there was some scent or something hormonal or something where he's like, eh, this guy's got it in him to grow up into one of these things that harmed me.
What you're connecting is that the dog jumped the fence because it wanted to get away from you?
Yeah, they were like,
No, that's not it. No, they're just, this is a dog that, they're still in fight or flight. Like, their instinct is to just run. Like, and that is a lot of rescue dogs. They'll say, like, rescues will warn you, you know, you have to be very careful near open doors. You have to make sure, like, because this dog will literally just run. And it's because their nervous system is so out of whack. But it's not a case of the dog just running away from you specifically.
Okay.
I mean, I found a dog running through the streets of South LA. I was actually volunteering at the South Shelter. And with a wonderful program called Canine Youth Alliance, that they choose shelter dogs around 12, and they have a 3-week program. It's ongoing. Usually, it's at the Boys and Girls Club, and the kids will each kid will team up with a dog, and they train the dogs like basic
nice
stuff. And we often pick like the old kind of wompy dogs that are just like have been. There are dogs with like that have been in the shelter for over a year. It's so sad. So we'll oftentimes pick those dogs, but we have to temperament test them, make sure that they're appropriate to be around children, and you know.
Yeah.
But anyway. I was leaving that program. I was in South LA, and this little kind of Chihuahua mix was running down a busy road, and it's in my DNA. I'm like, I don't care if I'm like late to a job interview. If I see a dog that needs help, I'm most likely gonna pull over and chase it or whatever. And there was this other guy that was also trying to help the dog. I could see he was. Well, I wasn't sure. I was like, is that his dog? And then we both pulled off on. Following this little dog, she ran down a residential street and she ran into a driveway and went under a car. And then he and I both got out of our cars, and he was this like very kind of eccentric German man, dressed kind of like fashion-y, like Euro fashion.
Yeah.
And he had a thick accent, and he was like, she's not my dog. I can't do a German accent. That was more French.
That was a little French, yeah.
Long story short, we got the dog out from under the car. It took like an hour. I got her, brought her home. I reached out to a rescue group that I know called Mayday Rescue. They were like, okay, if you'll foster her, she'll be a Mayday dog. She got adopted, and I stayed in touch with the family, and they were like, oh my God, she just wants to run. Like, they'd lost her a couple times, and because the door barely opens, she would just be like, pew, out, gone, running.
Yeah.
I don't even know how they got her back, but there's certain dogs that's just because they're just so full of anxiety, their instinct is to just run.
Yeah.
You know, and you see those dogs that get lost. When dogs get lost, like, they're like, don't try to touch it. Like, you see the missing dog or lost dog signs. They're like, do not try to touch the dog. Like, call this number if you see the dog. Because when most dogs are in that place, they just run. And it's like, they don't know why they're running. They're not running to something or away from something. They're just running because they're scared.
How much like personality do you place on a dog's decision to do certain things in that, like, humans kind of do that too. Like, I just need to go. I need to travel. I need to be out there. But we don't think of it the same way with, like, I bring it up because one time I was staying with some friends in Portland for a comedy festival, and I was staying out really late at night, and they had their baby at the time was maybe like between 6 months old and one. So I was like, this is, you know, I got to be ultra quiet when I come home. And so I was coming in through the side gate and using a side door where like no one could hear me. But the gate was really rickety and really noisy. So I thought, well, I'm not going to latch it and shut it all the way because it's
boy.
But I closed it within like, and it was heavy. I still don't know how this beagle nosed it open. And we had plans to do a bunch of stuff the next day. And we're like leaving as a group. And then someone goes, where's this so-and-so?
Oh, boy.
But he was just trotting as though he was like sightseeing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dog I always bring up that I had that was like the life of the party, very mellow, just like a person. Hey, man, come on, let's go do this. Oh, all right. We just had like a very symbiotic relationship. One time he got out, and this is what happened all the time. I had a roommate who was just kind of a wreck and would leave the gate open, come home with some friends, you know, partying really late. And then I'd wake up like, where is this? Ah. And one time I fed him and I left thinking all the gates were closed. I get this call. Hey, I have your dog. I'm like 10 miles away on my way to substitute teach. And I'm like, I can't turn around. I can't come back and get him. She goes, well, I'll tell you what, like I'll tie him to the porch if you're comfortable with that.
Oh my God.
And like, you know, to his leash, like clip to his leash and with a bowl of water. And I'm like, that'll work. He'll just stay there. So she goes, here's my address. Like, you know, when you get done with work, just come by and grab him. I go, okay, I'm on a half day. I'll be there at like 1 o'clock. Not too terrible. So the moment the bell rings one, I am like sprinting to my car, floor it. I get to this house. I see a bowl of water, a rope frayed at the end.
I knew it. I knew it.
Like, oh, no. So I drive home to change
yeah,
into
that's
my
that's what I was thinking. Like, that's not good.
But who's waiting for me in my yard? My dog.
How far away was your house?
It was like several blocks. So he had, and then another time he got out and I put on my like dog chasing clothes. I go, and he's just sniffing flowers. He just wanted to be out like seeing the world.
Well, that's another thing is, you know, you said the beagle, that's a scent hound. Like, I do believe dogs will just follow their nose for sure. I mean, I don't think it's some big, like, you know, I want to see the world. I think they're just like, oh, what's that smell? Oh, what's that smell? Oh, what's that smell? I mean, I had you might have met my old dog, Stargell.
Stargell, yeah.
He was a little wiry terrier mix. God, I loved that dog. He lived to be 18. And
I was going to say, I associate you and Stargell with like so much of me knowing you.
Yeah.
It just,
yeah, he was,
that was a tough one.
He was like a limb of my body. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, that's how Smitty was with me. Like we yeah. were just ultra close, like people that knew our dynamic, probably the same thing with you and Stargell. Like, it's weird. It's not like it's your child. It's not like it's a sibling. It's not like your, it's almost like your shadow or like a familiar or something. There's just a weird symbiosis that happens with an animal that, like, when people, like growing up around horses, when people scoff at like native people and their communicative skills or their ability to ride bareback and hang off the side of an animal, that's not just like, I'm bending it to my will. There's a communication there that you only know if you've been around animals a lot. Like, well, you can't really define that. Scientifically, you couldn't describe, like, why did that just happen?
You can. Scientifically. No, I'm reading this book. God, I can't remember the name of it, but he's a animal behavior scientist and he's studying literally love and dogs
okay.
and the relationship between dogs and humans. And there are a lot of actual scientific studies happening trying to prove that dogs do, quote, love humans. And the guy, the writer, is, because he's very sciencey, is making fun of himself the whole time. Like, I can't believe I'm saying this kind of, you know, because I mean they can look at their brains, the parts of their brains that light up, and you know that they're so emotionally like humans. They attach to their human caregiver in attachment styles the same as a child and their parent. Like the way puppies attach to their human being that cares for them is, you know, like secure attachment, anxious attachment. But what was I going to say about Stargell following his nose? I can't remember. It's Sunday, my brain.
No problem. If it comes to you, feel free to interrupt me, because I had a number of those stories with Smitty where, like, one time he was...
Oh,
go for it.
Well, what I was going to say is I also think that there's something really special about... Because I got Stargell when I was 21. How old were you when you got Smitty?
19.
See, I think that's kind of unusual, especially these days. I don't feel like a lot of real young people, like, just out of the house are going to go and get a dog. And I think, like, I wasn't a great dog owner. I was busy. I was in New York City. I just moved there. It was insane for me to get a dog. But maybe because I grew up with dogs, I was like, I need to get a dog. Like, I need to have a dog.
Yeah.
And I just walked into the Humane Society and walked out with this little wiry dog. And I think that's a really amazing relationship because, you know, we were growing up. Like,
yeah,
I did most of my growing up once I moved out of my house and was on my own as an adult, as a young adult. And my dog was right there with me during all of that. Like, I got him when I was 20-ish.
Yeah.
And he lived for I had him for 15 years or 16. I mean, that's epic. My entire 20s.
I know.
I had this dog with me. Yeah. And that actually is insane with you. Like, that actually, I think most 20-something-year-olds aren't that. I think it's a very character building, not to like say how cool we are, but I do think that it shows a level of responsibility that even just that those dogs stayed alive.
Well, I had. So 11, 12 was an interesting age for me in animals, because then I got this horse that was like in our price range, which meant,
oh boy,
yeah, so he'd been abused also. But
oh my God, our lives are so parallel in the animal realm. We had a bargain basement horse, Sabra, and then she ended up being pregnant, so we got a twofer.
Oh, nice. My dad was Tony, and he had there were mixed stories. No one knew what it was. Some people thought he'd been hit.
Did you say Tony?
Tony.
A horse named Tony?
A horse named Tony was my guy. But I had I don't know if you do this. He had like 1,000 names. So people were like, who are you talking to? Like, ah, it's this horse. Like, he's just, anything in my realm has like a million nicknames. And Tony was like that fight or flight thing would run away from me. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go out with a pan of grain. So when we got him, he was like, we rode him, but he'd been pretty tired. So he was like, yeah, you can ride me around. And then we got him home, let him rest for a few days. He was fired up and not in the mood to be touched or petted or caught. And so then it was just like, my goal today is to touch him. And that would take like 3 days. 3 days of like putting the grain down. He'd come over and eat it. I'd move one step. Pew, he'd bolt.
Okay.
The next day, 2 steps. The next day, I touched his shoulder. Then he bolted. And then pretty mm-hmm. soon. And then by the end, like putting him in headlocks and just buddies. And Tony, like, similar to, or like when I got Smitty, I'm like you, like I lost my train of thought of like, oh, mm-hmm. The story I was going to tell with this was, the beginning of it where we were, you know, getting to know each other, feeling each other out, and then going to like being ultra buddies. There's like, I don't know what it is, like the familiarity that comes there with like your life experiences, mm-hmm. like having to with Smitty, like I took him with me when I did stand up. I would sneak him into hotels.
Mm-hmm.
I would
oh, yeah.
look, I'd go and like look in the mm-hmm. hallway and like, oh, they have security cameras. So I'd go get a blanket and pretend that I was just fidgeting with this blanket as I walked. He was
been
just
there.
Behind it. I'm like, stay right next to me. And then I'd sneak him in the room. And one time I did that. And then he started barking the moment I left.
It
was
no.
I got there and the show was in like an hour. So
oh,
I didn't have enough.
Shit.
If I could like acclimate him to the room, he would be like, I'm fine, I'll stay here. But
right.
if I had to like.
You had to rush out.
I had to rush out.
Yeah,
I'd
he was
barking.
Like, what?
So I'd go and leave him in my car. I'm like, well, uh-huh. I got to leave the window down. All my stuff is in here. People can steal it. I'm like, I have a guard dog. So I remember
yeah.
one time.
You just crack your window. You don't leave the whole thing down.
I wanted him to be able to like put his head out. So like I do my set and I come back after and he's asleep in the back seat.
Good boy.
But so asleep that I'm like, oh no, was there, even with the window that far down, is it too hot out here? You know, or like.
Did someone poison him through the cracked window?
And I reach in and just start petting him and he barely looks up like, oh hey. I'm like, he would not be a great guard dog in this situation.
No. But oh, like, yeah. I used to do that stuff all the time. I would bring... Stargell was a small dog, though, so it was easier.
Yeah.
He was 12 pounds. How many pounds was Smitty?
Huge. He was like 80 pounds, probably.
Okay. I must have met Smitty.
I would think so. I had him in Austin. Yeah. And like, but the sacrifices like that you talk about of... you know, being without them for times or feeling like you're a bad dog owner. Like when I started doing the road a lot and then had to like leave him places or, you know, not see him all that frequently is just brutal. It's such a hard feeling to be like, man, I am responsible. Oh, whew, just like you, it came back to me. So Tony, the reason I brought that up in the first place is that.
Back to Tony.
He was running around. This is when I was like 13 or so, but still pretty young. I think I'm in like seventh or eighth grade. And there was a lightning storm and he was flying around with several other horses, and he stepped on a stump or a root of sagebrush that ran up through his foot and almost popped out the back.
Oh,
it was so gross. But we couldn't see it. It healed up after the thing, so the vet had to come out and like sedate him, dig around in there a bunch, pull out this little stick that was like the size of a pinky finger.
Wow,
and be like, that's what was causing it, and it went right up against this navicular nerve, which is like really for horses like a death knell. Didn't touch it, but it meant me having to like mix up Butte in the morning, change this iodine like medicine boot on his foot, change his gauze, get like inject him with it, and that's how like the headlocks and becoming buddies. It was really like he needed me for that medicine. And like before school the bus was at like 7:15, so I'd be up so early like breaking ice. So when you talk about like having a dog at 20 where I just had to scoop him food twice a day, I'm like, that's nothing. Like when you, as a kid, I look back like that was a lot of responsibility and probably a good thing.
Yeah. That's amazing that you did that.
I think so now. At the time, I was like, ugh, I'm so tired. But like, you know, I kind of fought to get this dude and there's always the risk of like, well, you're not going to take care of him. Like, this is an expensive item to have around. So
yeah, kids these days, think about kids these days. I'm sorry, but I'm going to say it. Kids these days. I don't want to. Like,
I think they'd still do it. It just depends on the kid, I guess.
Well, I just mean, I don't feel like, or maybe it's parents these days. More like it. You know, I do feel like if kids say they don't feel like doing something, generally, parents are like, respect, you know, like, because I'm as a professional dog trainer.
Yeah.
I have lots of clients that have kids and almost always they're like, oh, it was the kid's idea. But of course, I'm the one with all the risk. The parents are always like, oh, they said they would help take care of the dog. And I'm like, yeah, well, you probably just enable them, I'm guessing, because... I mean, I know there's like, I don't have kids, so I don't know how that you get kids to do things when they say no. I don't know without punishing them or scaring them. And I don't believe in that.
Yeah.
So,
It could be genetic to some degree. Like our 3-year-old is pretty helpful. And then I was doing a bunch of like landscaping work, which is kind of idiotic for a rental place, but I also like I can't function if things are in disarray.
Yeah.
And so I thought, and then also like
I've always planted gardens if I have yards and rental.
Say, like, why would you come home to a place like not my responsibility and just live in sort of squalor when you can change it? And then in addition to that, the activities you can do with a young kid, you can go to the park so many times, you can paint, draw, whatever. But if you're doing stuff, a lot of times you just want to be in the mix. And when our landlord was here one time, he was like, why are you doing this? And I was like, well, you know, one, it's helpful. Two, I think it's good for this little dude to see this.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, that's a good point. Like my son, when I ask him like, hey, let's go change this. He's like, let's just hire someone and just back to playing video games.
Exactly.
And I was like, I think you start it really young. You start it early. Like I'm doing it and you can help or not help, but you... It's like the little hen, little red hen.
Sure.
She makes all the bread and then she gets every item. And then at the end, everyone's like, I want to eat some of that bread. And she's like, get out of here. It's my bread.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's such a useful story to kids of like, it's not later in life when they're 7. Come help me with this. No. Oh, I swear I'll.
Yeah.
You're so far behind at that point.
Yeah. Or especially if you start asking them to do things when they're teenagers and you never actually really... Right. You just did everything for them.
Yeah.
Up until then. So being somewhat a little bit self-sufficient, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I used to do occupational therapy and I worked with kids and sometimes, and the goals were always, you know, these were kids that whatever, they would get evaluations and they would be delayed in some way.
Yeah.
It didn't mean there was any major disability always. Like, could just be like, oh, their handwriting is a little behind. Oftentimes it was handwriting, but it was oftentimes self-care, like putting on, you know, donning and doffing socks. That's putting on and taking off in OT terms. But yeah, like I became so conscious of like, you know, here's your sock. Let's, you know, showing them, because I feel like parents so often will just put the stuff on the kid.
Yeah.
Because it's easier and it feels nurturing and nice to do that for your kid, where instead of like, okay, like pushing the kid past, like, because I feel like frustration tolerance would literally be one of my goals with the kids that we work with, because so often they would just have zero frustration tolerance. So asking them to do something that's a little bit challenging, putting on a sock,
yeah,
they'd be like, and have a meltdown the moment they couldn't get their toe in, you know? So breaking it down into baby steps. So I'm going to open it up for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can stick your toe. Now I'm going to show you how to tuck your thumb under the sock. Now you do the pulling. Like, it takes more time. And you know what? This is very similar to the dog training workshop that you and Emily Rose and Cobra came to, the cooperative care, which is rather than doing things to our dogs, like holding them down and clipping their toenails or, you know, putting ointment in their ears, if we are proactive and build this kind of cooperative, like you're doing this with me rather than I'm doing this to you.
Yeah.
It's similar. There's some overlap there.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to...
Same with you and your horse. I was thinking about that. Like, you, to even just to build trust with that horse, you had... And with a horse, you have no choice. Because dogs, we can hold them down.
Right.
But you had to move slowly. You had to break it down into steps to build that trust. And yeah, and you had to bring an offering, a peace offering. Here's some oats or whatever. So, you know, rather than you should just be with me and let me do what I want to you and you should obey me and listen to me. I feel like that is a thing with people and dogs. They have with pet dogs, which is a newish thing. You know, dogs are being just captive pets is relatively new.
Yeah.
And we're just like, stop being a fucking dog. Any behavior that a dog does that annoys us, frustrates us, is problematic for us, is literally them just being dogs, them just acting naturally. So what we have to do is teach them how to survive in this world that we're forcing them to live in.
I used to always say, because when you have a really good dog, I think you can be a little... like ignorant or dismissive of like what it's like to have a dog that you just can't explain. Like, what is that? And I would always say like, oh, dogs don't learn anything they're not taught, whether that's your energy, whether that's like how you're treating them, how they get the cues they are taking to exhibit behaviors.
Or genetics. There is some genetics. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it, like, and you know, like you see people, this is probably like a meme or a thing you've seen in comics or cartoons, or like they do it in movies where they do like a montage and like person looks like dog, person acts like dog, and this person that's wiry and like they have a wiry terrier and on. And
yes.
And like our current dog would just be exhibiting some real like hyperactivity. And then we would kind of look at each other just so static, just so like, where is this coming from?
Mm.
And those sort of things feel like that. Maybe that's more genetic. Or are we subconsciously putting off this sort of tension, this energy that he's receiving and like, got it loud and clear and just a ball of energy. As he's getting older, it's like diminished a little bit. But it went from when he was real little, he'd walk behind us on the leash, kind of timid, to then like ultra chargy and just bouncing up and down, hyper, almost because it felt like he was excited and the love that we had given him was fueling him, fueling all that. But it was hard to put our finger on and be like, where is this coming from?
Yeah. I mean, I was just listening to a dog podcast, as I do, and they said all behavior has a function with dogs. With humans too, but it's I think with dogs it's even easier, and when you, as a dog person who is obsessed with dog behavior and changing behavior and teaching behavior, I really do have to look at, you know, because I look at a behavior and I'm like, why are they doing that behavior? And there's always a reason. It's never just like, unless there's some neurodivergent thing happening, which can be, or there's pain. I mean, that would be a function for a behavior. But yeah, every single behavior has a function. So that kind of demystifies it. But a dog who's, you know, a behavior that's looking like hyperactivity could be a dog that hasn't had enough stimulation, you know, just like a kid on a rainy day.
Yeah.
Who's trapped inside, parents are busy, and they start acting like freaks because they're bored. Dogs get bored and dogs are understimulated. So that could be, sometimes anxiety can manifest looking like kind of hyperactivity.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, there's a ton more I would love to talk about. I don't know if you have more time to like take a little break and keep going.
Sure, I do.
Come back for part two. Taco Truck Lager. Refreshing, crisp, nice on a hot day. We get into more of it as we usually do. Thanks again to those of you who support the show on Patreon. And keep an eye out for Intercepts Season 2 coming any moment now. If you're not on the mailing list over there at theendlessabyss.org, that would be helpful. The recent season of These Are Those Tapes is out. I think I'm forgetting something. Anyway, davidhunsberger.com, thespacecave.com, pings at the Space Cave if you have suggestions for beer or guests or topics or anything else. Anyway, thanks for listening. This is a song called Sedatives by VG. I hope you like it. Thanks for stopping by the Space Cave.